Thank you for listening to this downloaded audio. AchievingExcellence.com is your source for books, CDs, downloads, tapes, and articles about NLP. Check out our site. That's AchievingExcellence.com for more great material on NLP.
Those of you who are familiar with the material from the first set about metaphors of identity, what I was looking for and my motivating question at that time was, how do people know what to want? How do people know what to want? Because I found that people want all sorts of things, but any sense of why they so deeply wanted it, I didn't have until I began to look at it metaphorically. I began to look at how the metaphors organized people's lives into, it was a race and they wanted to win. Or it was a garden and they wanted to tend it and grow it. Or it was an adventure, an exploration that they wanted to undertake. And then suddenly the values of winning in one person's life and another person's life, not even be concerned at all about winning, but whether they were growing anything in their life, when anything was blossoming or prospering. These differences became very apparent. And that describes, in a sense, one dimension, as I talked about before, of the three dimensions of human experience that I've been exploring. One is process. This is being explored in various realms by neurolinguistic programming, brief therapy, Ericksonian hypnosis, certain forms of family therapy are very process-oriented. But then I'm asking, well, what's the content? What is it that's being processed? And this we got into the operating, or as I'm beginning to call it, living metaphors. That life is a game, or life is a journey, or life is an explanation. And there's another dimension, as I said before, that I left out, which is the dimension of time. Because you can have meaningfulness in an individual life in a moment. That is, if the person has the idea that life is sailing, then in a moment you can experience that. You can imagine yourself on a sailboat, and what would be important to you? What would you pay attention to? But how does that explain their passage through time? That is, that what a person wants when they're 5, and what they want when they're 15, and what they want when they're 25 and 35, at least in my experience, changes dramatically. And from that, I began to look at stories. Now, this is not original with me. Postmodernism is a whole intellectual movement, also a subset of a constructivism, where people are going, okay, society is a social construct. We build a society out of our perceptions and our beliefs about what the world is like. Or the individual identity is a social construct. As we construct, we make an identity. That I could look at any person here, I could go, you're a daughter, and you may also be a mother and a sister. And this forms a context of social relationships. And because you live in the 20th century, you're going to have a career, as opposed to another time in history when you might have just been a bearer of children. And that all of these are ideas in people's heads that form a context in which they create their world. And there's a number of people exploring this. The idea that purpose and personal role come from the stories that we tell ourselves. Of course, I couldn't leave well enough alone. I wanted to know where the stories came from. Where do stories come from? Now, the Jungian idea is that there's this deep well of a collective unconscious in which all of these ideas and images and stories reside, and they come up and through. But I still wonder about what's the constellation of them? How do they fit together? And I was drawn to this quote. Actually, it's a pair of quotes. Art, unlike science, does not deal with the world that man contemplates, but the world that man creates. Or, in the words of a Greek poet before Christ, art does not reflect nature, it contains it. Art does not reflect nature, it contains it. The premise I'm going to lay out right at the beginning, because it is so radical, and you're going to have the whole rest of this experience to confirm or disconfirm it, which is that we live in the world of the imagination. That when we look out on the world around us, whether it's out on the street out there, or the trees, or around the room that we're in, that in fact we look at that through the filter of the imagination. And that in the past, they had these artificial categories, like they had that there was action in the world that certain people would take. They were men of action. And in order to tell their story, in order to find out about them and what they did, they constructed something called history. And then there was this other world that people lived and worked in called philosophy, which was the world of ideas. And the great ideas that are passed down through time. And this thing called philosophy developed. And in the middle of these, kind of the stepchild of both of them, at least it's the way it's been thought of, the people of barbarous intent, the unruly, as they've been called by certain philosophers in the past, were the artists. And the artists could either be pictorial artists or they could be written artists. And the artists here, they were combining action and ideas. And their vehicle, in the pictorial sense, of course, was the picture. And in the written sense was the story. And we, because of history, this collection of actions, ideas that have been brought down to us, are beginning to get a long enough stretch that we can look back and go, and this is a new idea, by the way. You know that history seems to depend on who's telling it. Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, history, it's like his story. You know? What about her story? And in fact, there's a whole group of critics and researchers that are exploring feminist history, or the idea that history is the story of white males. You know, the boys' club, the white male boys' club. Except that Columbus wasn't white, and the guy who in America was named after wasn't white. They were brown, but we'll put that aside for a moment. Still, it was that these stories coming down to us about their explorations and their discoveries and what was important, that Napoleon was so important. But what about the other streams of time? The ideas that were going on, the social changes that were going on, the relationship changes that were going on. All of this stuff, we have enough of a perspective now that we're beginning to realize that it's who's telling the story that makes the difference. All the way down to this postmodern constructivist idea that we are living inside stories not of our own origin. That we are living through the history of our own past. And we're the latest embodiment of it. Only we have this edge that hasn't appeared very often in history, where we can see that it's happening. On Metaphors of Identity, I really was pointing to this is a function of identity, that a person identifies with their metaphors. I am an explorer. I am a journeyer. I am a gamesman. I am, you know, somebody who is on the losing end. Whatever the story was, the person had that as a sense of identity. What I want to do this time is open the door on the idea that of all those individual stories, which need to be highly individual to address the person's life, need to be a very particular expression. One woman had life as a gamble. And yet, when we got her image, her iconic image for that, it was a roulette wheel, and she was on the player side against the house. Now, if you know anything about gambling, you know that when you play against the gambling house, you're always going to lose a little bit. Well, the metaphoric shift that we were able to do just in a moment was, well, what if you were the house? So she still had life as a gamble, but now in her mind, because it's embedded in that very modern, the roulette wheel, the whole casino scene, it's now the idea is there that, oh, well, now I'm going to be winning more often. Or you take the story of Kaz from the tape set, where she had this idea that life was a merry-go-round, so she was going nowhere. Highly particular. You know, she has this idea very embedded in the 20th century, the merry-go-round, this device going around. And then we had her expand that. She expanded that to being an amusement park. So the whole world was her amusement park where she could let people in or not. So it needs to be particular for the individual. What I want to point out now is that there are universal living metaphors, or what I'm calling living meta-metaphors, behind each of our individual metaphors. And you can kind of explore on your own how yours fits into this. There's life is a season. So he's in the spring of his years, or it's summer, or he's headed for a fall. It's the winter of our discontent. Or the idea that people are plants, which of course shows a very agricultural history for us. The idea that people, she's just a little sprout, knee-high to a grasshopper. You know, she's in full bloom, the ripeness of his youth. Or the decay, the grim reaper. In other words, that these metaphoric phrases that, as we know, shape the way people think, have a larger metaphor behind them that people are plants. Or that life is a day. It's a new morning in America. No, the day is closing. This culture has reached its zenith. All these ideas related to metaphors of a day. It can also be that life is a presence. We arrive in life, we're present in it, and then we talk about somebody has passed away. Oh, they've departed. It slips right through. We can hear it in our everyday language. Life is a burden or suffering. This might not be well known in our culture, but it is the history of most of our kind. This veil of tears, this burden to carry, that death was a release. Fairly well known was that life is a play or a story, or nowadays, given TV and movies, we would call it a drama. Or life is a video. And of course, you have the opening act. You set the scene. You have difficulty. You have the climax and the conclusion. You tell people, you know, life, this is no dress rehearsal. Or you say to somebody, you played your role really well, even though it was their real life they were playing. We talk about the final curtain falling. Now, I'm using the sort of broad brushstrokes of this, but if somebody has the idea that life is a play or life is a drama, and they're playing that out, this is the larger meta-metaphor that they're playing out. Or life is a substance. Candle in the Wind by Elton John, the idea of Marilyn Monroe's life being a candle, very common poetic image. Somebody who is very bright or somebody that's making a real impact in the political scene, they say he's burning bright, like the flame. Or they could talk about somebody on the deathbed and they said the life is flowing out of them, that it's a liquid. In other words, that one's life being is a substance. Even the phrase, he kicked the bucket, means that the life substance was in the bucket and he kicked it and now it's gone and so is he. And you wouldn't say that was the final curtain, because then it would be a mixed metaphor. That is, that each of these has a metaphoric coherence. Very well known, of course, is life is a journey. We begin this journey and we travel through, you have different adventures. And it doesn't really matter whether it's life is sailing and there's stormy weather ahead, you got to look out for the rocks, or whether the person says, well, you know, this relationship has run out of gas, which partly has journey, or whether it's the kind of thing where a person talks about, you know, taking the first steps towards a new life. The vehicle, so to speak, doesn't matter. The underlying metaphor is going to be the same. Just like in the idea of life is a game. It's the roll of the dice. You know, somebody comes, they join the great game of life. They played it well, you know, or they played it badly. Well, I played my hand badly. What happened to him? Oh, he cashed out. Or the sort of metaphysical idea, life is a game that we all play, but no one can ultimately win. And a new one on the scene, life is a machine. He's worn out. You know, well broken in, or the one that I said earlier, you know, that this relationship's run out of gas, which is a combination of journey and machine. And that's how the individual metaphors get expressed. For instance, the idea from the first tape said, if somebody had the metaphor that life is sailing, well, that's a subset of the idea of journey. Sam had life is a race. Well, what's a race? A race is a combination of life is a journey and game, because that's the win-lose one. And if you look at the rest of these, they aren't really win-lose. Game, though, is a win-lose. So this combination of life is a journey and life is a game makes life is a race. Does this make sense? The idea, there's these underlying structures that each of us in our personal metaphors are playing out either singly or in combination. Kaz, who had the idea that life was a merry-go-round, would have the idea that life is a kind of a play and life was a kind of a game. It just it didn't go anywhere until we helped her expand that, until she expanded that. Now, what about the idea that Sarah had life as a rose? People are plants. So each of these come under one of the other metaphors. They form a larger structure. Now, that's a way of reaching in and showing how that content side can be contained in a larger way. But what about the imagination? I mean, does it matter to you whether it's a good season or a bad season? Does it matter to you whether your life, if you've got the idea that it's growing, does it matter to you whether it grows or it withers? Does it matter to you whether you're in the morning or in the late evening of your life? Does it matter if somebody says it's time to depart from life? Or does it matter to you whether the story, the play, the drama has you going well as the hero? Or are you the chameleon? The person is, you know, is this, all these things are happening to you. Does this matter? And the answer is, of course it does. It does matter whether we're winning or losing. It does matter whether the journey is satisfying or not. It does matter whether our machine is just humming right along or not. And this is where the idea of will, the idea of desire, enters this whole complex. See, there's the Jungians have worked out a ways of thinking about this. There's Michael White and his colleague who have worked out other narrative ways of understanding. The idea of narrative in people's experience as being an organizing principle is it's becoming a popular idea. And I, by background, have a literary training. And I looked at these sort of constructs, the idea, well, what it is you have an inner child that you need to grow up. Well, I said, well, where does the inner child come from? I mean, where does that metaphor come from? Or somebody says you were enrolled in a story, and what we want to do is de-enroll you. And some of us know where that metaphor came from. And other ways of organizing stories, like people say, well, there's the plot, you know, the basic plot of, you know, it's like, you know, boy meets girl, and then, you know, something happens, and then eventually boy gets girl, or girl gets boy, or something. And the thing is, though, that there is a much wider and more deeply thought of knowledge of this. If you go back to my idea here, and I know this is a fairly large exposition, that if the story is the organizing principle, if you look at this again, that ideas are what? A series of statements of truth or untruth. That history is a series of actions. But what is a story? What is a picture? It's a series of images, of metaphors. It's another way of thinking. And if we discover, and if you agree, the idea is that the imagination is what's determining all of this, then what we'd want to do is find out the structure of the imagination. And that's what we're going to do. What I'm going to introduce is very much based on the work of Northrop Frye, who did a lot of work in the area of literature, of story, of the structure of imagination in story. What I'm adding to this, similar to my experience in the first set with George Lakoff and Mark Johnson, what they did is they explored metaphor, and I went, this isn't just ideas about thinking. This is the way people organize their lives and their actions. In the same way, Northrop Frye, who's departed from us and is esteemed elderly critic, he thought he was describing the structure of stories. What I'm going to be claiming is he was describing the structure of consciousness, of imagination. He thought he was just telling people how literature came down through the ages. I believe he was telling people how we organized our lives.
Thank you for listening to this downloaded audio. AchievingExcellence.com is your source for books, CDs, downloads, tapes, and articles about NLP. Check out our site. That's AchievingExcellence.com for more great material on NLP.